Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. It's Thursday, it's 5 o'clock, and it's your favourite podcast, Only Murders in My Mind. Welcome, everybody. And I have with me my lovely co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Carol.
And Mike Jackson. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Carol. Hi, Liz.
Yo.
Before we begin today, I just want to give a big shout out for the Warrington Lit Fest 24. It goes right through June. Liz and I are involved during Local Author Week, with a local author event at Central Library on Saturday the 15th from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. And Liz is doing a slot at Stockton Heath Library on Tuesday the 18th from 10 till 11. See the link in description for more information. I know some of you are interested in where we are with our particular projects. Liz, you've been busy lately, haven't you? Sort of coming to the end of a couple of writing episodes.
Episodes. You make it sound like some sort of illness
thing, you do,
which
don't
maybe
I?
It is, but yeah. I've had one of the Nora books, which is kind of in the middle of its edits, and that has been through beta readers. So I need to do the final kind of edits and polish on that and respond to feedback on that. Book 5 of Booker and Fitch, Murder at Work, out at the end of the month. Still waiting for some beta feedback on that, but also heading towards the final polish on that, and that will be out soon. So far, feedback's been great, so that's very reassuring. I'm also researching a new book, which is going to be Maisie Frobisher, Book 5.
Oh, excellent.
So, yes, I've been delving into 1890s Paris.
Oh, nice. Oh, because she ended up there, didn't she, at the end of the last one?
Well, that's where she's going on her honeymoon.
Yes.
Yes. So, shenanigans, I feel.
Sorry, Liz, I thought you said 19th century, 1890s Paris.
Paris. Maybe there will be parrots. I haven't made my mind up yet. If I can get a parrot in for you, I will do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem, anytime.
We will wait with bated breath. Yeah.
Indeed. I wonder how you catch a parrot. What would good parrot bait?
Polyfix.
Oh, dear.
It's going to be a great podcast today.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're only drinking tea. I promise you, we're only drinking tea.
I know, it's a bit worrying, isn't it? Maybe it's the sugar rush from the mid-podcast snacks that's been doing it. But that's me, apart from editing and the usual. So, yeah, how about you, Carol?
I am still going through my edit of Book 4 of The Warrington Detective. And I apologise to all the people that are waiting for the next one, but I've been a little bit poorly and then I went on holiday, so I'll get down to it now. But yes, not got anything else in mind. There's a few things I'm tossing around for maybe the next writing that I do, but I've not come to any conclusions yet. Mike, how's your...
If we could just say it without laughing.
I feel as though I'm being set up here. Well, actually, my novella, I've published it, and it's called The Science of Lying, and it's hit the New York Times Best Publisher. But best... Yeah. No, I'm lying. my novella is...
You were doing well with the additional detail and the embellishments.
Yes.
It just kind of went a bit at the end.
No, I haven't done any more on this imaginary novella, but what I have done is I'm just about ready to self-publish another book of drabbles of 100-word stories. I've got 100 of them. And I'm also well on the way to finishing and publishing another book of short stories.
Oh, excellent.
So
wow.
I am close to it. In fact, the 100-word stories, which hasn't got a title yet, I'm hoping to self-publish within the next, I don't know, 10 days, 2 weeks.
Ooh, marvellous.
So,
is there a lot of murder and mayhem in them?
Yeah, do you want me to... Well, I'll read one out that's not got any murder and mayhem.
Okay, then.
Because they're only 100 words. So,
yes.
Yeah, maybe it'd be difficult to get murder and mayhem into 100 words.
Yeah.
I don't know. So this one's got nothing to do with murder and mayhem. It's called Master Brewer. In a realm where stars mingled with teapots, Master brewer Alphonsus worked day and night. His celestial home, a sprawling steam-powered teapot, was an interstellar marvel. Copper walls shimmered against the cosmic backdrop, its majestic spout casting a warm golden glow on the floating tea gardens. Alphonsus was a master of the art of cosmic tea. His brews, infused with stardust, could soothe the most turbulent black hole, make nebulae swirl in delight. Tonight, he concocted a special blend, one that promised to calm the tempest raging in the heart of the Andromeda Galaxy. The universe waited in hushed anticipation.
Lovely.
It's slightly different.
It is for you, isn't it?
But exactly 100 words.
Cool.
Exactly 100 words.
And people... I like the idea that tea can solve anything. Well,
according to my middle son, tea and Jaffa Cakes. Mm. And we're not sponsored by Jaffa Cakes, by the way.
Although everyone wants to send some in, we're very open to offers.
We can eat them, but we don't sponsor them. He thinks that a lot of the world's problems could be solved over a cup of tea, and a couple of Jaffa Cakes. And I am with him on that.
Do you want one more?
Yes, please.
Just to fit into the murder mystery.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Free at last. Every night I lie awake plotting. It's not hate that fuels me, but desperation. He's a shadow in my life, darkening everything he touches. I've decided on poison. It's cleaner, simpler. I practice my surprised face in the mirror, rehearse my tears. The plan is detailed, flawless. It will look like a heart attack. He's not been well for a long time now. Nobody be surprised. As I prepare dinner, I imagine a future of quiet mornings, coffee in solitude, no more harsh words. Just one small act and I'm free. Tonight, I'll sleep soundly, dreaming of silent dawns. But not my wife. I didn't kill my wife.
Oh, that's good. Yes.
I might change the he to a she. And...
Just give her a day off. Why don't you? You can't kill her every day.
So that's where I am with my wife.
Yes. So, yes. And our boots can be found on Amazon. Uh-huh. It's all
and from selected booksellers.
Yes, yeah. It's all on the links to the podcast where you can get our books and short stories and anything that we publish.
Yeah.
Now the topic for today is the science of lies. Ooh. Are you a good liar? Are you a bad liar, Liz? Are you a good liar?
Nah, I'm not good at all.
What gives it away? Is it?
I think I'm very self-conscious if I do. I think I could probably manage like a social lie, a white lie. You know, the sort of thing like, oh, it's not that bad, thinking, oh, it is. You know, I could probably manage something like that. But I think any kind of whopper I'd be, no. I'd just be too embarrassed. I think I'll give myself away in a heartbeat. So
probably just by the expression on your face.
Probably, yeah. You saw the face I pulled when you even like asked me if I was a liar. So yeah. Although maybe I'm just faking it.
Well, that's it. I've known Liz quite a while now, and she does have a couple of tics that when.
Oh, do I?
when if somebody asks her a question and she's like, she sits there and you could see her thinking, what is the nicest way to answer this? Because we are nice people.
Is this an event thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you get all sorts of questions at events.
You do. You get silly ones as well. Mm. Mike, are you a good liar?
Yes, I can tell a good lie. To be honest, I consider myself more of a storyteller than a writer. Mm. And during my whole teaching career, I spent most of my time telling stories, whether it was in the classroom or in assemblies. And I think if you can tell a good story, then you can interweave all sorts of truths and untruths into it. So I suppose that sort of lying that is involved in storytelling, yes, I think I can do that quite well. Because I think you don't have any sort of moral sense about it. It's not as though you're lying to actually hurt somebody or deceive somebody. You're lying as part of the storytelling. And I can do that. I can tell a good story.
Your moral compass does not come into that at all.
It doesn't come into it, no. So, again, it's the whole premise around what do we mean by lying? And
the definition of such, yes.
I'm just imagining a sort of blurb now. Mike would do anything for a good story. Where would he draw the line, or would he?
Oh, yes.
See, he seems quite calm about this. I'm like,
the advertising. I am a very truthful person, and as my mum used to say, if you've not got anything nice to say, don't say anything. But if I had to lie for hopefully the right reasons, I think I'd be very good at it. I don't know, but I think it's this poker face thing, isn't it? Not don't blink. Can't play poker, by the way. Don't know how to play poker. So we're going to look at it from, as I say, a perspective of how people use it, I suppose, in our stories and things that we watch and listen to and hear. But we've got some definitions here. And Liz was saying, because we've all done a bit of research on this, popular television programme you've probably heard of is Lie to Me. And that is about the science behind people lying. And it's about a group of people somewhere in America who help out the police and the FBI and anybody else that needs it by interviewing suspects, witnesses, etc., and being able to tell by their body language, their eye movement, their tone of voice, etc., even sort of some twitching of the mouth, these sorts of things, whether they're lying or not. And I found that an absolutely fascinating. It got a bit samey after the first two series.
Yeah, I can see how it might.
You know, and it's one of those things that start going a bit ridiculous because they're trying to make people carry on watching it. But the actual science behind it was really, really good. We've all done a bit. I've got 8 tells. How many did you get?
I read a couple of articles. Right. I can't tell you what I've got exactly, but some of them actually contradicted each other, which was interesting.
Yes.
Schools of thought, as they say.
Yeah. So do you want to start with some of your facts that you found out?
Okay. Well, one of the things that really surprised me, because I think having, you know, done some research, now I'm thinking this will probably change the way I portray some of these things when I write, is the traditional thing is, you know, if someone's lying, they cannot meet your eyes. But no, apparently a study has disproved this by saying that people who lie, 70% of the time, they will maintain eye contact with you. And one of the things it said is if people look away, quite often it's because they're thinking about what to say. But a liar wants to see how you're taking what they're saying, so they will lock eyes with you.
They want to see
whether you're buying it.
That's what I saw when I did my research. Did you see anything different, Mike, about that?
I found exactly the same. That, you know, as Liz said, when people are moving their eyes, it usually indicates that they're trying to think of what to say next, whereas a liar doesn't have to do that because they've got their story prepared so they can look you in the eye and tell you the story.
Yeah, they know what they're going to say.
They know what they're going to say.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I got was they will answer in very short sentences.
Yes.
They won't try to extend the information because by doing that, you're more likely to be caught out. So you give them...
someone can trip you up.
Exactly. You know, it's like, oh, I saw that they were driving a red car. What sort of red car? Oh, I don't know. You know.
I read something interesting following on from that where... one of the ways to find out if somebody is lying is get them to tell their story backwards.
Okay.
Because they've rehearsed it so that they know the chronology of the story.
Yeah, that's something
get
that
them
I
tell
found.
It backwards.
Liars tend to do a chronological account, whereas if you're just telling a story, you'll probably do the most important bit first.
Yes.
Yes.
And then, you know, something else that was important, and eventually you'll get to the, oh, yeah, and I'd driven there from wherever, and, you know, it's a hot day. And whereas, you know, you'll probably get the full spiel of, you know, I was driving along and it was cracking the flags and then I came to this bit and that's blah, 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 whatever, you know, and then getting to the meat of the story. So
that sounds really logical.
It's interesting.
Because you're right, if you are a witness to an incident, you should be able to pick up what happened at any point during, you know, the police say to you, the lady was lying on the ground, and this is midway through the whole thing.
Yeah.
What did you do? And you go, oh, well, you know, I made sure they were still breathing or whatever. Whereas, as I say, if it was, you know, it's the person that's lying would have to start to sort of, the cogs would be clicking and they'd be thinking, well, what did I say for that bit sort of thing? So.
Something else I thought was really fascinating about the whole kind of omitting detail was people omitting pronouns.
Oh,
yeah. So it's kind of sort of taking themselves out of it almost.
Right. So
they might say something like, the example I saw was something like, oh, yeah, I went out, went to the restaurant, ate lunch. And what they haven't told you is they met someone at the restaurant and they ate lunch with them.
Right.
You know.
Again, putting down on the very basic information.
Yeah, because, I mean, they did go to the restaurant and they did eat lunch, but what they haven't told you is who else was there.
Right. So, okay. Yeah. Have you got some more points?
Apparently, liars tend to use, says he, using both his hands, tend to use both their hands a lot and do a lot of gesturing when they tell lies.
Why is that?
I think it's because the brain is so busy working to make sure that the all the details of the lie come across as we want them to. And, you know, I think...
Maybe it's sort of extra putting your point across.
It is, and we do that. You know, if you're talking excitedly or...
lots of people talk with the hands.
With the hands, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently something. And the other thing, too, that I saw is that liars will try to cover up their mouth because that's the source of the lie.
Yeah.
And while it would look obvious if you just put your hand over your mouth, what they tend to do is sort of scratch their eyebrow or scratch their nose so that their mouth is half hidden.
Yeah, and sort of fidgeting's another
thing. Fidgeting is another one.
Yeah. I imagine that's that kind of, you've got nervous energy and want to release it somehow and you're kind of,
Yeah. And one of the things I found was that they start off the sentence or paragraph talking quite slowly and they speed up. Again, I think it's that nervous,
it's the nervous
energy.
Because the brain is having to work much harder when somebody is lying than when they're actually just retelling an account or telling the truth.
And I think there's something around, one of the things I saw is that if there's a deviation from how that person normally is, that quite often is a sign. So it's not necessarily that everyone will speed up or everyone will slow down or everyone will fidget more or everyone will be more still. But if someone who is normally quite still is suddenly really, really animated, then maybe that's a sign that something's going on.
And they'll very often ask for questions to be repeated, which again is
giving them time.
Is think time. Yes. Presuming that, you know, they heard you. I mean, sometimes people will ask you, if they're in a state of shock, they won't be taking on board what's being said. So, you know, but if they're not, if they're a witness 2 or 3 weeks later, they've brought them in.
I think the other one, too, that I came across is that they will liars will give too much information and ask questions that haven't actually been asked of them because they've got it all there and they want to give it to you.
Yes. And I suppose the thing is, if you've rehearsed it, then you've got it all in chronological order in your mind and you're like, right, I'm going to deliver this.
And also you sort of almost preempting the questions because in some ways you don't want the questions to come because the questions might trip you up.
If somebody is interviewed a few times over the same incident, if the statement is exactly the same each time, practically word for word, that is usually a sign that they're lying because with the passage of time, we tend to blur things, forget things, get things wrong, round the wrong way. So if somebody is, they've either got a sort of photographic memory, which isn't that common, or they're lying. If they can, sometimes, I mean, you've probably seen this on the police procedural things and dramas where you'll have maybe 2 or 3 people who are in cahoots over an armed robbery, let's say, and the police interview him. And it's funny because they jump from interview room to interview room. They're all being interviewed at the same time. They're all saying exactly the same thing from a script, you know. And it's just so obvious that they're all lying. And I mean, it's a bit stupid, really, as well, when you think about it, isn't it?
It's funny because when you do this research, you think, it seems so obvious that somebody's lying. And of course, all these things come together, and if you're not behind the psychology of lying, it will be very, very difficult.
And it's also if it's an emotional occasion, then, you know, if you're listening to all this stuff, you could well be affected by it if you're, you know, involved in this matter. So
I suppose police, experienced police officers will automatically pick up, training or no training, you know, if they've been doing the job long enough. I mean, not specialised training to why people are lying and what to look for. Interview techniques generally will push them towards the fact that, I think sometimes as well, we've discussed this gut feeling that somebody is not telling the truth.
And I suppose you've got to be careful, haven't you? Because you come out with a list of things. I mean, one of the things I read is that people tend to put their palms facing upwards when they're lying. Mm. And we talked about this business about covering your mouth. And if you're not careful, you might assume because somebody is doing one or more of these things, they're telling lies. Mm. And of course, all the research says the majority of the people, or 50% of the people we study, it's not so a hard different. And fast.
What do you think about polygraphs? Because they're not used, I don't know about other countries, I don't think they're used in America. I suppose it depends which state it is. Mm. They can't be taken forward in this country, especially as a testimony in court. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, do we even use them? Do we use them in this country?
It's an old-fashioned idea, isn't it?
Yeah,
you used to see it on the television.
Yes. Where they've got the probe here and they've got the
little thing, you know,
beep. Yeah.
I mean, something like James Bond was very good at
slowing his heartbeat
and tricking these polygraphs.
But,
I think that they probably, when they were used, have been found to be flawed. In the way they use.
I suppose it's also, is there anything else that could be causing your heart rate to be speeding up? For example, being in a situation where you're being questioned by police.
They do a baseline first. I think they still do use them in some areas in America just to cut down the number of suspects they've got.
I suppose in the end, all they can do is use something like a polygraph to give them any indication that somebody might be lying.
Yeah,
but once they get into court, they've actually got to have hard and fast evidence. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So it's this gut reaction. A policeman saying, "I'm convinced he's lying," or "I'm convinced she's lying," isn't worth anything unless they can actually get the hard and fast proof that that is the case.
Yes, I think the art of interview from a detective is a very specialised skill, and it's the way they ask the questions, the order they ask them in. I mean, I think in real life, because I've watched a few police, but mind you, they are being, they know it's going to be on television, but they're always very calm. There's none of this shouting and banging their fists on the table and going over the table at them and going, you know, you're lying to me, I'm going to get you. There's none of that. They just sit there and they're very, very calm. The person they're interviewing might be getting more and more worked up. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that is... because they have different levels of interviewers.
Right.
You know, you've got to be a grade 3 interviewer to be able to maybe do a murder interview or something like that. And I think that's down to exams they've passed and their experience, you know, when they go into to interview people.
I suppose what they're looking for is that they are looking at these people and hoping that they might say something that doesn't quite fit in with what they said before. So it gives them an avenue to go and investigate more. Looking in all the time for that hard and fast proof.
They're looking for them to trip themselves up. And then, as you say, they can follow them down the rabbit hole and start saying to them, why did you do that then? And why did that happen?
Yeah. One of my favourite programmes, which has nothing to do with crime and murder, mystery, is Would I Lie to You?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
Because you do have some people on there who really can convince everybody else that they are telling the truth, when in fact it's a lie, or the other way around. And quite often, I mean, Bob Mortimer, he's one of the best. And it's usually because he's a great storyteller.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
Have you seen the one with the egg in the bath?
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, then just watch it. It's amazing.
I don't think I've seen that one. I'll have to look it up.
And he just...
Everyone is in stitches. Yeah. It's so funny. Yeah.
He can tell the most absurd stories, but he tells them in such a way that he leaves you wondering, could that be true? It must be a lie. It just leaves you wondering.
Yeah. And when he tells the truth, he does that as well.
Yes. So it's not so much that he's a masterful... It goes back to what I was saying earlier on. It's not that he's a masterful liar. He's just a masterful storyteller.
Yeah.
And he can take the most outrageous lies and use his skill as a storyteller to make it sound like the truth.
Yeah. Now, we have got different grades of liars.
Or different types of liars.
Different types of lies.
Why is Carol looking at that list?
No.
No idea.
So the one I've got here is the compulsive liar. Now, this is a psychiatric disorder. The person who has this condition does not realise they are lying. They are absolutely convinced, even though everybody else knows what they're saying is untrue. They're absolutely certain that they are telling the truth. And that is really difficult. I saw somebody being interviewed on the television, and they realised that this person had been conning a lot of people. And the interviewer said to the interviewee, are you a compulsive liar? And she went, no. And I'm thinking, you're asking the wrong question there. She wouldn't even know that if, you know, sort of she realised that she was. She doesn't recognise that as a question, because as far as she's concerned, she is not lying. What other, have you come across any other sorts of what you can put in a category, really, of a liar?
In terms of categories of lie, yeah. I was looking at, apparently there's lies of commission.
Right.
Which is where you are absolutely giving wrong information.
Right.
You know, you are saying something that is not true. There's lies of omission, which is where you potentially just leave something out, which, you know, will give people the wrong impression. And the other one is lies of character, or lies of influence, which is a kind of a weird category, but it may not even be things that aren't true, but you're trying to create a false impression.
Right.
So maybe you would, I don't know, emphasise particular things and maybe not mention something else to make people think, oh, right, okay, she's a this, or,
yeah,
you know, or, oh, she definitely wasn't there, or, you know, things like that. Did anyone else come across?
I mean, the only one is the obvious one of wife lies, where you're telling a lie because you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you watch television programmes, that's sometimes is intermingled into these sort of cozy mystery stories. I'm thinking of, what am I thinking of? The one in Paradise. Death in Paradise, for example, where, you know, you've obviously got a group of people there. They're all telling an element of truth, and somebody's being really untruthful. Mm. And you might get somebody who's telling a white lie because they don't want to upset so-and-so's husband or so-and-so's wife. Or
yeah, and there'll be something that isn't connected with
whatever's
happened, but they still don't want it to come out because it would be so embarrassing.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it's thrown into the pot, sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, and you very often see this when a suspect has had an affair with somebody, and they're telling lots of lies just to cover that fact up, which is and we've said this before, it's taking the detective round the wrong road just because of that one lie.
Yes.
And it always makes me laugh when they go, does my wife have to know about this, or does my husband have to know about this? And I feel like going, yes. And they always go, only if it, you know, it's necessary. We're not into breaking up marriages, sort of thing.
But it's part of the writer's arsenal, isn't it, of being able to have these different lies thrown into the pot to muddy up the water.
Oh yeah,
it's not like we've talked about this before in another podcast. It's that the whole red herring thing. Let's throw something in just to confuse our reader, so that it's not too obvious who did it.
Mm. Yeah, it's I find it difficult to. I do it, but incorporate the lying person in the story, because you've got you can write about their facial expressions and that you know, they're breathing heavily and all this sort of thing, and they've got perspiration on the top lips, but it's the sort of thing that is better seen on television, I think, because on television it's like that, isn't it? Well, most television things are. You could spend, you could read three pages and think, I wonder if they're lying or not. Whereas you look at them on television and go, oh, yes, they're definitely lying.
But in some ways, even on the television, you don't want the liar to be exhibiting all those obvious facts like fidgeting and sweating a lot, because it almost gives the plot away.
Yeah,
it gives the game away.
You don't want your perpetrator to be a rubbish one.
No, no.
Yeah, you want them to be clever and to be able to outfox, don't you? That sort of thing. It's interesting when a mass murderer is being apprehended, and usually at that stage, they just open all the flood doors and tell the absolute truth, don't they? You know, I'm thinking of Neil, is it Nielsen? And the Yorkshire Ripper, son of, what was it, son of, was one of the American
Son of Sam.
Thank you.
All right.
yeah, I did it.
Why do you think they do that? Is it a kind of, quite of a relief?
I think it is, yes, yeah. Because we were saying before, doesn't it, telling lies is hard work. So if your whole life is about continuously telling lies, your brain is working 99 times to the dozen.
Yeah, but it's also that physical reaction, because apparently one of the things that happens is your blood pressure goes up and your heart beats faster. So hence the sweating.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might see someone's neck, like the vein in their neck going and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that the thing with adrenaline is it does wear you out. If you're constantly getting hits of adrenaline on a regular basis, it is, I think some of the psychopaths who are mass murderers are quite proud of what they've done. Oof. And they want to tell people about it because they want to be infamous.
Yeah. It's back to this moral compass.
Yeah.
But, you know, they found it quite easy to lie because they had a plan, which was to maybe to become infamous, or no moral scruples about the terrible deeds that they were doing.
Yeah, and some of them did. They thought they had a moral compass. They thought they were doing these things to make society better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them really are convinced. If you listen to the tapes of the real recordings and things, and they're the sort of things that make you get the shivers up and down your spine. I think we are going to end it there. Has anybody else got any further comments about that?
I have one more, which is possibly like a tip for people out there, which is apparently your subconscious is better at detecting a lie than your conscious mind.
Oh.
So quite often, you know, in your gut, that can't be true.
Yeah.
But your conscious mind is going, oh, well, what about this and what about that? And they're so nice and all of those things. And, you know, that's the vicar's wife. She couldn't possibly.
I've done it.
Yeah. So, you know, all the things you know about that person are getting in the way of your gut saying, come off it. That's definitely a thing.
I know there's, I'm not going to say where this is because I don't want the mafia coming after me. But there is a certain restaurant in a certain city that some of my family frequent on a regular basis. And it's there was a fire there, just take that into consideration, and now it's all been revamped. And it's going on and it's going on and it's going on and it's always empty. I've got that as laundry money for the mafia.
Ooh. Wow.
Because I don't know how they keep going, you know, because they do a few takeaways. I've been in there a few times with my family and the food's lovely. It really is nice, but there's never anybody in there. Oh, so I'm, you know, that's my suspicious mind.
If Carol's not here for the next episode, then you'll know that they tracked her down.
All right.
So, just as a final thing, what do you think all this, you know, lying means for us as fiction writers?
I think.
Do you think you can be a terrible liar in the sense of being rubbish at it and be a decent fiction writer?
Well, I think to write fiction, to write the sort of fiction we're talking about, crime, mystery, murder. It's got to be full of liars. You know, you have a mystery, you have a murder that needs to be solved, and you know, if on the second page somebody puts their hand up and said, "I did it," it's a very short novel. You know, you're gonna have a fair cop.
Indeed.
Instead, you're gonna have lots of characters there, many of them who will be telling lies for one reason or another, and it's the book's job. To sift their way through. So I think in some ways you've got to be a good liar.
I'm saying I'm a terrible liar, but I love inventing stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm a compulsive fiction liar.
It's the artistry of...
It's the storytelling again. It's being able to take yourself away from the real world and say, in this world that I'm writing, that I'm creating...
It's true in this world.
Yeah, I can tell as many lies as I like because it's needed for the story to be gripping and to be want to be read by many people.
I'm just thinking in this book that I'm editing at the moment, the fourth Warranted Detective, the only person I can think of that lies in that, there's a lot of not saying things, so it's lying by omission, is actually one of the detectives.
Mm. Oh, yes.
But I don't think anybody else lies. It's just that they don't know all the facts.
And that's a really interesting twist.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. So, but I have written in some of the other Warrington detectives where a witness has lied through their teeth.
Yes.
But if I'm thinking of what you're thinking of, it really takes its toll, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That lying.
Yeah. Mm.
And you can see there the physiological, that's it, effects of it and the toll that it's taking on that person.
Yeah. So, but nobody actually else lies. That some people don't just tell the whole story. So that,
it's lying by omission, as you say.
Yes. But so that, having brought that up, that made me think then that, you know, I haven't, except for the person on the right side of the law.
Mm.
Right. I think that was a really good episode. I hope you're
Listeners agree.
Yeah, you're the ones that are important. Let's face it.
It's your verdict.
So, hit the subscribe and the likes and just come back to us next time.
And before you go, we mentioned, I think, right at the beginning that we do have a blog post that you can visit.
Oh, yes.
A blog. Only Murders in My Mind. It's on wordpress.com. And we do a short story competition. Well, not so much competition, a writing prompt every Friday. So if you want to take part, tell your own lies
for our benefit.
And we're always looking for some really good stories that we might read out on the podcast.
Yes, and if you've got any ideas for what you'd like us to talk about in a future episode, then get in touch, please.
Yes, we've got quite a long list, but it won't go on forever. So, to be able to do things that people request would be nice. Yeah.
Mm. And even if it's something that you'd like more information about, you know, you might have listened to one of our podcast episodes and thought, oh, I could do with another one of those with a bit more information. Let us know. We can talk about anything. Anything.
And forever.
And some of us have been known to lie too.
And on that note.
So thank you very much for listening and we'll see you next Thursday, 5 p.m. Bye for now.
Bye.
You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music, In Peril, was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.